He had so much good information this week that he needed to wait till Friday. He's been gathering all week. Tim Hasselbeck, our man, we are ready, and I hope he's ready, because the buildup for this hit this week, having to wait till Friday, it's tough, but we're here. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, now our man Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, what's going on?
What's up? How are you guys?
Doing fantastic.
There's a lot of buildup. By the way, that was a nice little setup. Yeah, I hope you're off to a start to your
day. That you may have been up for like five hours. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you probably haven't started your day at 11, but, you know, whatever. You get the gist of it.
Hey, it was good. I figured you were, you know, maybe setting lineups for this weekend or something.
That's during the break.
Okay.
I want to
go
ask
easy on the arms, man. Go easy on the arms.
I know. We just talked to Jared Parker. So I'm definitely going to keep that in mind for sure. Got to go at 10. Got to go easy on the arms. So speaking of going easy, we've been talking about this week. There's a lot to do of, you know, carries and workload. And look, that is very prevalent in sports today, right? We kind of have a new mindset about preserving professional athletes. But I want Coach Hasselbeck to answer this, because I when we talked about it this week, and now there's, you know, a story out there that the Titans are considering a Derrick Henry extension, but your guy Bill Barnwell has already put out an article, you know, is Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey and Ezekiel, are all these guys going to bounce back and be those backs that we've seen in the past, or, you know, are they starting to be on the back end of their career and everything else, so with injuries and mm-hmm. workload, how do you handle this? Because here's the tough spot that Mike Vrabel's in, and this is why I'm asking Coach Hasselbeck. How do you limit Derrick Henry when he's your best option? And, oh, by the way, the only way Derrick Henry can get paid as an athlete and you keep him happy is to give him the workload, right? Mm-hmm. If he's not as valuable, if he has 280 carries, he can't demand – big money. He can't demand certain things. So how do you handle that dynamic?
Yeah, so here's how I would handle this is, you know, I would really appeal and convince the player, because I think it's the right thing for the team and for the player to be playing his best football later in the year when it matters the most, right? You know, there's always this talk about when you train for a season – like, you shouldn't peak at the start of training camp. That's not the point. The point is, you know, to try to peak when the games matter the most. So, you know, I think as it relates to that on a season-long perspective, what you would want is you would want Derrick Henry to not be worn out when you're playing the most critical games, whether it's, you know, at the end of the regular season because it's seeding or winning your division and postseason. You want him feeling great then. So with that in mind, you know, like the idea that, like, hey, you know, weeks 1 through 8, he needs to, you know, have 27 touches a game. Like, I don't think you want to do that. I really don't. Now you're trying to win the games, and maybe some games he, you know, he is going to have 27 touches. And then, you know, other games, you know, it's like, well, you know what, he had 14. And we're okay with that. If you can, you know, if it's not costing you wins and losses. So I think there's that aspect of a season and management in a season. From the perspective of the career, I just think the gloves are off. Like, the running back position is a, you know, there's only so much tread on the tire position, and you know, for lack of a better way to put it, you run them into the ground and then you get new tires. You know, I mean, it's just, that's what you do.
Right, but that's two different philosophies. So that's what I'm saying.
But I think no. But I think this, I think on a season-long perspective, you can say, look, we're going to get to whatever the number is, 300 and something carries. Like, we're going to get there. Okay. But it's going to look more like a J curve than, you know, just steady Eddie all the way through the season with the number of touches and stuff. Okay.
Okay.
But you're going to get to the number. you're going to get to the 300 plus wear and tear number. And so I think in doing that, you basically operate with the understanding of, look, there's a shelf life to the position. And so what I'm saying to you is how I would handle it in the season is this, and then how I would handle it in terms of the front office meetings, I would say, let us, like, I'm fine being wrong if he had four more good years in him. Like, I'm fine if he ends up being the next Adrian Peterson and we let him out the door. I'm okay doing that. Like, that's the position I would take.
Okay.
On that.
Tim, so, you're the coach of the Colts. Okay, so he's going into his third year. So that means the prime. I mean, he's not even in the prime, or maybe he is, as a running back. Going into his third year, Jonathan Taylor is in the Titans division. He had 332 carries last year for over 1,800 yards, 18 touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, throwing his receptions and his receiving yards, he has over 2,000 total yards and 20 touchdowns. Are you scaling back in year three? Are you doing the same workload? Are you doing more?
Yeah. No. So what I'm doing is he's my workhorse. Plain and simple. They just signed Philip Lindsay too, right? So, like, you know, he'll have a role.
But what is he?
But listen, here's the deal. He's the workhorse, okay? So whatever the number is, 330, 350, 360, 310, like whatever the number is, I'm running him into the ground, okay? Now, again, I don't want him having, 27 touches, per game through the first half of the season. I don't want that. I'm fine with him touching it 18 times or less.
What if you can't win that way?
Yeah, I think you can. Like, listen, go look at it. I mean, the Titans have won games. It's not like the Titans don't win games when Derrick Henry rushes it, 17 times. Like, they still can win games. But what I'm saying is I'm just aware of it. But, like what I'm doing, like Jonathan Taylor, like, he's going to get over 300 and something carries for me, over 300 and probably 50, 60 touches. Like, I'm going to do that. And then you know what else is going to happen? His deal's going to be up, and I'm not signing him to a long-term deal. I'm not doing it. And he's an amazing player, and he's going to have more good years in front of him. But I don't want to be saddled with the contract of a running back who had a Liz Frank and then had a knee and then had a I'm not getting in that game.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, in a bigger sense, we've tried to tackle that issue, and I noticed what's the first thing I'm seeing on the NFL page on ESPN.com? Are McCaffrey, Henry, Kamara, Elliott done as star running backs? Like, this is the way of life in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Can you have a bounce back after a certain amount of time? There seem to be a lot of questions on Derrick Henry. And then on top of that, you have a total redefinition of roles in the passing game. So look at that angle of it. How, just specifically with Treylon Burks, there's a lot on his shoulders here, and he's starting from scratch. You've got another player in Robert Woods who's coming off a major injury that you're going to be counting on. That seems like a lot that has to come together here.
Completely agree. Loved the Robert Woods signing at the time, because it's like, wow, like, the guy's just, I think it helps the passing game, like, plain and simple, an established receiver. The injury stinks, but because of what we've seen guys do with ACLs, like, you think, you know what, like, I think we'll be okay. And at the time, you're thinking AJ Brown is here, and it's like, I like this combo way more than than the Julio Jones combo, the year prior. But now you add the newness of him coming off of an injury, and now you add a first-round wide receiver. And I think I've mentioned this to you before. And AJ Brown he's a number one receiver. Treylon Burks, for all the comparisons to AJ Brown, and that's fantastic. And I mean, I even give you this perspective. I maybe shared this with you. My brother was at the combine. He actually called me from the combine. It's kind of out of character for him. He called me at the combine, and he's like, there's this receiver here from Arkansas. I love this guy. And so, he might be amazing. he might be absolutely amazing. For my brother at the combine to single him out as somebody that he thought was super impressive. Like, this guy could be incredible. But the hit rate for first-round wide receivers, meaning, like, the first-round wide receiver gets to a second contract, is essentially, it's the worst position in terms of hit rate that exists. It's, like,
really?
Under 30%. I think it's 27%, yes. And so the hit, now the best is offensive line. In fact, like, interior offensive line, center and guard. But the hit rate for wide receivers is 27%.
And these are wide receivers drafted, period?
In the first round. So here's the threshold.
Okay.
Wide receivers drafted in the first round that get a second contract with the team that drafted them.
With the team that drafted them.
Yeah. And so listen, is it a perfect formula? No. But is it a really good formula to figure out, you know, was he Kevin White or was he Megatron? Yeah, it is. Like, it's a good formula to figure that out.
Okay, and this goes back how many years now?
It goes back, I'd have to look at it. Somebody sent it to me, but it's a 15, 20-year study.
Okay, so that to me is an interesting part of it, because I think a lot of people are hopeful that receivers are being taught better coming through now. I don't know if that's the case. These are just theories that are thrown there. That might be easier to get NFL-ready wide receivers now as opposed to 10 years ago, but it's still, like you point out, the numbers are the numbers.
Well, and so, like, you know, think of, you know, Jamar Chase. So everyone's like, okay, well, look at that. And you just look at some of these young receivers that have kind of burst onto the scene. Justin Jefferson, like, you name it. These young guys have come in, and it's been like, wow, these young guys are really great. But that's such a tiny sample size that we just start looking at, like, the last 3 years, and it's like, hey, it worked out. And look, maybe the theory is, look, all these 7-on-7 leagues, guys are coming into the league more ready to be pass catchers. Maybe true. But if you look at the, you know, a bigger data sample, the reality is that first-round wide receivers get missed on a lot. So, look, I hope the Titans hit on Treylon Burks. Every highlight you watch, you're like, man, this dude's going to be a really, really good player. But it's unlikely. That's the best way I can put it. It is unlikely that he will be as good as A.J. Brown. It just is. So, so Willie, I think you're on it in terms of, okay, running back getting older, got a guy coming off an ACL, got a receiver that, you know, it's unlikely that he's going to be as good as the guy that he's replacing. The quarterback is already under fire. Offensive line wasn't a good pass blocking offensive line a year ago. Like, there are a lot of things that have to come together. I agree.
Concern for sure. I'd love to see, Tim, a study on whether the trend has gone up, stayed the same in the last, say, 5 years, as we talked about this development of the 7-on-7 and stuff like that. That's a really fascinating stat there. But I want to ask you one more before we let you go. We have had some fun with you over the years. Your experience in NFL Europe, you had a good experience, right? It helped you. So give us objective.
Help me.
So give us your objective view of how the USFL is going here. I honestly haven't watched it that much. There's so much going on for me. I just haven't had a chance. I'm rooting for it. Of course, it pulls at my heartstrings because I did watch the original USFL a lot as a kid, is it serving its purpose? Can it survive?
Yeah, so I think it's probably too early to tell if it's serving its purpose. You know, I actually turned some on the other day. I think there were replays. You know, and it wasn't, I mean, just being real, like, you know, empty stadiums, not a ton of energy. Like, did it feel, did it feel like, wow, this is about to hit? No, it didn't feel that way. And I can tell you my experience in NFL Europe was, you know, we'd play in Frankfurt and there'd be 45,000 people there. You know, we'd play in Barcelona and there might be, you know, 5,000 people there. And so, you know, it really varied city by city. And I think with it being year one, you know, all the games being played in one spot, they're not necessarily, you know, the ability for a city to, you know, try to connect, or a team to connect with the city that they're in, because that can go a long way. I mean, look at, like, for example, and I know it's not apples to apples here, but, like, look at the way the Sounds, you know, try to reach the community here in Nashville. Well, like, that's got to be an important component of it for, you know, for any of these teams
you know, in their cities when they are operating in their cities. So, and I think there's two separate factors. The idea that, like, hey, is this going to help a player, you know, achieve his dream of playing in the NFL? Like, yes, because your other option is not playing. Like, so, and who, I don't know that it's going to be a quarterback or a running back or whatever it may be, but like, look, Kurt Warner, Brad Johnson, you know, those guys won, you know, are Super Bowl, you know, are in the Super Bowl as quarterback, Jake DeLome, like all those guys. So I can't tell you that Kyle Sloter is going to end up, you know, doing that, but at least it's giving him, you know, it's keeping the dream alive for it. And I think that, you know, that will help it survive, but I think ultimately it's going to be how the businesses get managed and how they engage in their communities that really, you know, tell the tale of whether or not, you know, it's going to work.
Tim, if you want to come this weekend and support Tidal Wave Blue, I'll get your gate fee, you know.
Hey, listen.
I'll take care
of your
gate
fee.
Not,
I got to get used to Tidal Wave Blue. It doesn't roll off the tongue the way Smyrna Braves.
I know. Well, we've got two Tidal Wave tenure teams, so we're blue.
What are you switching the name to next year?
We've had it this way for a good while. There's two.
Yeah,
Tidal
Wave tenure. So think of the revenue. Think of the revenue you're leaving on the table by doing that.
I'll take care of your gate fees. Okay, I've got that kind of pull. You just let me know if you're coming.
Hey, listen. We're going down to Alabama to play.
Really?
Weekend, you know, think that's going to go. You know what we're going to do? We're going to drive to Alabama to play a team
from Smyrna
that lives 10 minutes away.
Yeah, exactly. Get used to it. It's going to happen.
How you guys feel about that?
Yep.
Let's just remain for real.
It was funny, Tim, because just to show you, this is not a new thing. I went to your brother. I didn't have a whole lot of contact with Matt when he was playing with the Titans, but his daughter was about the same age as my daughter, and we had a tournament in White House, Tennessee. That's not that far, right? That's a little bit of a drive.
No.
But his daughter was playing for the same club as my daughter. I was like, why? He was like, why did we have to go to White House to play those games? We could have just played right here. So I was like, this is how it goes.
Why drive 10 minutes when you can drive 2 hours?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Oh, good stuff. Tim, good luck in Bama. Roll Tide, roll. And we'll talk next week.
All right, see you, fellas.
Maybe we'll ask you about, if you could, look into the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher feud while you're down there.
You know what? I'll go ask little Mickey if he remembers slapping your knee.
That. And let's report back next week.
Okay. All right.
See you later. Boys. Tim Hasselbeck, he's a gem. Love talking to him. All right, tell everybody about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. Even if you've thought of moving, you probably haven't gotten very far once you start looking around at the prices of new homes right now. We see cranes going up. We see people moving to our listening area all the time. So it's not a great market right now if you're looking to upgrade and move to a different, bigger, better house, whatever that is in your mind. Not a lot of inventory, prices crazy, rates moving up. So this is what Loan Pronto has in store for you as maybe a better idea. Let them refinance your current home and turn the home equity you have into cash and then reinvest in your home, transforming your house with a new kitchen, new bathroom, outdoor living space, home office, whatever it is that you have in mind that you're looking for. Loan Pronto can help you unlock the equity you have, and then do some amazing things, turn your home into your dream home, and never have to move. So call Loan Pronto and ask about their home improvement refi. It's a fast and easy process, and it can get you thousands of dollars out of home equity to reinvest. So call Loan Pronto right now. Skip your next house payment in the process. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.